Okay, well, this is, I'm really grateful for Jamie Lynn and what she was able to say, because my talk is going to go a lot with what she said today, and my talk is going to be very different than what we have seen before. I'm not giving you a lot of hard data with statistical information. I'm giving you some observations of grazing, because I think we get caught up in the agronomics of this, and of course, the agronomy person who's supposed to be here is Steve Hines from Jerome. He was supposed to be. He is our resident agronomist, and he couldn't make this trip, so he talked me into coming and meeting with you today. And so I am the resident animal scientist, and so I come with the same background that Jamie Lynn came. Would well like to talk about. We certainly had Carmen Wilmore and Lauren Golden, and of course Dr. Shoemaker right there in the back from our research station. He is the base person that we bounce ideas off of, and we appreciate him. So in talking about this, kind of the roadmap that I'm going to take you are just some observations that we've had. We certainly agree with everyone that has talked, and you know, sitting through here all morning, it has been fascinating to hear the conversations and about how technical we can be about the cover crops and whether it's important to have the ability to pay for all this important forage source and or soil health thing. And so the importance of our goals and objectives, I think, cannot be overstated. You have to have clear goals before you head into cover crops, or maybe you shouldn't do cover crops. If you haven't got a clear idea of what you're doing it for, then probably that these are not for you. If in southern Idaho, we have a problem with wind. I know that's a revelation to anybody who's driven through Idaho, but anyway, a lot of times we just want ground cover. We don't need anything else but to stop the wind from taking our dirt and or soil, excuse me, y'all you agronomists. Jeez. That was the wrong thing to say. And having it on the roads, right? Because that's the problem, and we face that problem every day. And so the springtime, just covering the field with something is a critical thing. And so that's one of the reasons why we have cover crops. So you can kind of see where we're headed here. I'm sure you haven't talked about voles in cover crops, but I'm telling you that can be a problem. So here in 2014, we planted cover crops into a harvested field of barley. And this was no-till. That was so we used a no-till drill and put it right into the barley stubble. Well, we had a big, huge rain that year, and it brought the barley with a vengeance. All the volunteer barley. You'd sworn that we just planted barley, but we hadn't. Anyway, this was no-till. This was also no-till, but this was grazed, and this was not grazed. Now we went into the winter with this, knowing that we would have it come up again next spring. And we wanted to, you know, just kind of see what would happen. The voles, of course, they took cover in the place where we didn't graze. And the ungrazed part, they tried to stay out of, because the birds that affect our voles weren't going to be able to get into the cover side, whereas they would have been fair bait within the other section. Well, in the spring, so what happened in the spring was we had no growth where the voles were living. Do you see in the right-hand side? The left-hand side, we had some return of that cover crop and barley, whether it was, and you can see a few different species in there, but where the voles were, they had eaten that crop out. Now, I know we don't get voles every year like this. This happened to be a really bad year for the vole population, but it's very real. It's a very real thing, and if you're going to have a bunch of cover out there, so this was grazed. This section was grazed the fall before. This was not, and you can see the difference. So I got that. I brought that today because I felt like probably this isn't something you're going to hear from a lot of other people, and I thought it was kind of it was very interesting, something we did not plan for necessarily. We wanted to see what would happen with voles, but. We didn't expect it to be that dramatic. All right. I'd also like to discuss the timing and timing of grazing versus the quality and the quantity of the forage and the class of livestock. And I know this hasn't been, Jamie Lynn covered part of that when she talked about the different animals and the different classes of livestock, whether they're cows and calves or dry cows, they have a lot less nutritional needs. What if you're grazing steers and heifers? And so, you know, when you start, if we look at this cover crop mix, such a beautiful mix, it's not very tall, it's very relatively young. If we put cattle out into that, they will readily accept that kind of a cover crop, and that will be readily acceptable, and they'll do really well on it. If you wait until the cover crop, now this happens to be triticale within the cover crop, if you wait until you get to that point, the cattle, and the farmer brought in sheep. We didn't know that he was, but that's what he ended up bringing into this situation, and they wouldn't even go in. They wouldn't go in it. They just trampled it down. They bedded in it. They thought it was great to bed in, but they didn't. They weren't there to eat. Okay, that's a problem if we're going to actually use it. So there was another field beside them that was just wheat barely coming up, and of course they pretty well decimated his wheat crop there, but they didn't have a lot to do with the cover crop. So I think you have to consider that if you're going to graze, are you going to wait until it gets too old for them to graze? I mean, here's another study that we did where the farmer, he brought in heifers into this study, and he let this grow until it was all headed out. We had brassicas as well as barley, I'm sure, and we had peas, and there, I'm sure there was some vetch in with this, as well as some turnips. And as we got into this, again, it was very old. The heifers that entered that, they came in at about 600 pounds, and they ran around that pasture for 3 days before they would even touch it. And then they were forced to eat it. Now, so they did. You can see where they did. And then they were, you know, led into this section later. But this was that's what was left. And, of course, there was lots of litter, and that's a good thing. If we were looking for that, again, I think what Jamie Lynn said, if that's one of our goals, to leave a lot of litter and to have that be part of what we want, then I think that was successful. You can see that I think cattle, cows, older cows, dry cows especially, could have used something like this extremely effectively, probably for a very long time. They could have eaten that right down. You could have forced them to eat that right down sooner or later. And they would have done fairly well. The heifers didn't do as well on that pasture because they're not built to eat that kind of feed. And so I think as from an animal science point of view, as a grazer, we don't want to graze a crop like that. We want to graze it when it's a lot younger. Okay, there is certainly a difference between perennial forages and annual forages. And that's been touched on today several times. And I think, you know, we kind of forget that perennial forages, you know, they don't go reproductive as fast as annual forages do. And so you have a lot more grazing time that you're able to hit those and keep them non-reproductive. And the reason we don't want them reproductive from the animal science side is we'd like those to be more productive longer. And the minute they go reproductive, that production from a forage point of view basically stops. And so here in this pasture, we have, this is a perennial pasture, a nice cocktail perennial pasture, right? And I think that's a very great option for those people that want to have cattle in there all the time. Certainly you can't hardly beat that. If you get into, this is the oats and barley and another cover crop mix. Again, we're at the stage where they're not going to utilize that well. Now, interestingly enough, we just finished a study in where we had a field that a pivot that a guy wanted to raise cover crops. He wanted to see if he could raise enough annual forage to graze all summer long. Okay, that's a rather novel idea. Of course, we have irrigation because in Idaho, nothing grows without irrigation, at least in southern Idaho. Now, the northern Idaho, they actually get rain. We have no idea basically what that is. And so we have all the water we want. We just turn it on and turn it off. It's a wonderful invention. I just think everybody ought to be doing that. I know you can't. I get that. But anyway. So we had this pivot, and he wanted to see again if he could grow enough annual forage to keep cattle in there all summer and into the fall. And so we planted the 148 acres under this pivot, and he sectioned it off. He wanted to kind of mob graze it. We put 200 head of heifers into there. We probably waited too long to put those heifers into that pasture, and they didn't utilize it very well, right? And so part of that pasture we never even got to. On the first rotation, it had already gone to seed and was seeding out part of that pivot. But the real interesting part of that was, as we got into that a little, as we got later into the year, we noticed that the oats, they kept sending up tillers. Now the oats, now the barley did not do this. The barley, once it got reproductive, it pretty well stopped growing, and that was the end of the barley. He had a, and it was a forage barley that he used. But he had oats in there, but the oats kept sending tillers out, which was kind of nice because we kept that green, and you can see we've got quite a bit of brassica inside there. And there's some of the vetch. We do have vetch in this because it's the gold standard, right? What you said, gold standard for crops. But the oats kept sending up tillers, which was nice. So what really happened was we have a dry forage along with some of the brassicas. And I think the heifers learned to eat the brassicas. And so, Jamie Lynn, I will tell you this. I think cattle learn to eat certain things because they are forced to. And once they get a taste for it, they're not as opposed to it as you might think. So I would encourage you to do your study later after you've trained animals to eat brassicas. But anyway, the good thing about this was that the dry feed was there along with the brassicas, which the brassicas can be very washy to a cow, and you can have problems with diarrhea and those kinds of things. If you add the dry feed to that, that's able to kind of help that along to where they don't have the problems with the diarrhea type problems that you would see with just a straight brassica type. Okay, and this field, the part of the field that was never able to be grazed, it was not grazed until way later, until that it had kind of already gone to seed. In the fall, unbeknownst to us and to our great surprise, all that seed that fell on the ground, it started growing in the fall, and now all of a sudden in that quarter of that pivot, we had feed for fall that we didn't anticipate. It was a wonderful thing because the rest of the field was kind of done, but this part was just starting to grow. And you can see, of course, this has been grazed, but you can still see all the green coming up all around it. That's that barley and oats that are coming up into that field anew, which we did not expect. But it was kind of a nice bonus for what we were trying to do. And I was just in the heifers actually left the field that day that I was there. They were taken out. And then he was going to put cattle in, you know, cows, dry cows, into that pasture, into that pivot. For probably, I would guess, into December, he'll make them clean that right up. And they'll utilize that, again, because they are a class of livestock that's able to do that. And you know, when we, as an animal scientist, I like to look at manure. I know that many of you in here say, why my... My agronomist friend said, why in the world do you have pictures of manure? Well, that gives an animal scientist an idea of the amount of fiber, either that or the nutrient content of the feed. If that was starting to pile up, if you were getting piles of manure, that would tell me that we've got too much forage in that feed. And this was just last week, it was just last week where I took this picture. Those cattle, they've still had fairly good nutrition, it looks like to me, a fairly good level of nutrition. They weren't struggling with all the fiber that was there because of that new grass, those new oats and barley that was just coming up. Again, an interesting thing that we didn't think was going to happen. Well, another study we have done is trying to figure out how we can put cover crops into silage. You know, when you take silage off, you take off everything. There's nothing left. You have basically scalped the field. There's nothing left for cattle to be turned into. There'll be a few cobs now and then, but I'll tell you, they'd have to dig for them because they've run over them 400 times. So we decided that the producers wanted to know, can we go in and plant cover crops into a field of corn silage and have it be there when we cut the silage so it's ready for us to eat? Kind of a novel idea, so we decided to take a look at that. We planted cover crops the day they planted corn. We planted it every 30 days after that to see how it turned out. So we had no planting. We had planting at the corn planting. We had 1 month, 2 months, and so we had the four different times that we planted. And so this is the one that we planted with the corn. Very interesting. We found out that radishes could get just as tall as the corn. They became big, huge, gigantic plants. And as we harvested that, the place where we planted the same day that we planted the corn, that's what it looked like. All of that cover crop that we had in there, it was stripped off and no good, obviously. It was way old, and it was actually some of the highest plots that we had for forage, because it had a lot of the lamb's quarter and the red pigweed kind of took over too, along with our plants, along with the cover crop. So it didn't make the farmer very happy on several ways. But that's kind of what we ended up with. But what we wanted to see, so we knew that was kind of a bad time to plant the cover crops, because it was going to be before they were able to spray out the weeds. And so the next time, the ones that were planted a month away and then 2 months away, both of those were somewhat effective. Now, the cover crop that the farmer chose to put on there had a lot of ryegrass in it. Now, I'm kind of like Jamie Lynn. Ryegrass in our country isn't the greatest thing that you'd like to see planted, but that's kind of where it ended up. And there's some there. We are going to actually measure that this Thursday, and we'd hope to get some rain on it. It hadn't rained since we took this off at the end of September, and I was hoping to get some rain on it before we went in and actually measured it. So we will do that this Thursday. But it's kind of an interesting and I think a rather novel idea of how to do that. Now, finding livestock, I think, is a problem for most operations. Unless you have livestock of your own, to go out and just say, somebody bring me 400 head of livestock, that's really hard. I think it's very, very difficult. Unless you have people lined up, that's almost impossible to find in our country. Because, as you can see in the background, we have all these mountains, and they have a lot of grazing on those mountains. And so they're not just willing to just jump their cows anywhere and bring them down onto your cover crop. Now, we do have some producers that have chosen not to use public ground to graze on. And so they are using cover crops more effectively to help them do that. Or summer annual forages, as you may want to call them. So I do think it's a problem. And when you bring in heifers, of course, they're supposed to be spayed heifers. And, of course, these aren't as spayed as you might have hoped, as you can see. So we actually lost 2 head of heifers. They didn't die, but they were crippled because of the mounting and riding activity that took place. Again, if they would have been spayed correctly, that probably wouldn't have been a problem. So I think the point that I'm trying to get to is there are lots of reasons to use cover crops. We have irrigation, which allows us to have a lot of possibilities on how to use cover crops. In this particular study, we actually have the amount of money that he collected from these heifers. They weren't his heifers. He brought somebody in that was able to bring them in. And, you know, he figures he made $71 an acre on the cover crop, or the summer forage, whatever you want to call it, the annual summer forage. Now, that probably doesn't quite compare with the wheat that he would have, or the barley that he would have gotten off of it. He's going to plant this into barley this next spring. He wants to just drill right into the stubble and see if he can get barley to come up and see how that will do. He's fearful that he'll have too much litter on the ground, but, you know, I think with setting the cattle in there, the cows, the dry cows, I'm sure that they'll be able to clean a lot of that up, and I don't think it'll be as big a problem as he thinks it will be. But anyway, my time is actually done with what I want to say. I think we have a world of things to think about as we use cover crops. We don't have all the answers. We are trying to. The next study that we'd like to do is to look at different annual forages, and rather than take them to grain, we want to try to understand how they're going to graze. And so we will mimic grazing on these annual forages to see which annual forages are actually the best to help us provide the amount of forage that we want to provide at a level that will cause the gains that Jamie then talked about. Again, the animals that were on this particular field, they gained about 2 pounds a day. Some of them did poorly, though. They probably weren't the very best cattle. And so when we talk about the quantity and quality of cattle, that certainly has something to do with it also. So thank you.